Welcome to our special 25th anniversary program here on WFMW. It was 25 years ago today that a dream was brought to life. The late Elmer Kelly, Hubert Wells, and the late Edgar Arnold Sr. and several other stockholders brought to Madisonville what has now become a legend in its own time. We at WFMW are proud to present you with a look into the past, a visit in the present, and a peek into the future of WFMW Radio. You'll be hearing many familiar voices, including some of the people who, in our eyes, are responsible for making this broadcast station what it is today. Here's original stockholder and longtime radio personality Hubert Wells as he reminisces with Tom Weaver.
Well, Tommy, it certainly is a pleasure to be a part of this 25th anniversary for WFMW because I was fortunate enough to be one of the original members of the company. Actually, WFMW went on the air on Easter Sunday, April the 17th in 1949. A few months prior to that, Elmer Kelly and Edgar Arnold Sr. and myself had discussed the possibility of putting a radio station here in Madisonville, an FM station. FM was something new then. There was already an AM station here, WCIF. And I guess it was more of a dream than good business sense, but we went ahead with it and applied for it in August of 48 and got the construction permit in January of 49 and then remodeled the third floor of the then Karras building, which was later the UMW building, and now is owned by Al Braley, who has his corner there. Right. We had the top floor. And we went on the air on Easter Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. Our schedule was from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. And we had several dignitaries there, the late Harper Gatton and Edgar Arnold Sr. and Mayor Parrish was there, others. They made talks of congratulations, you know, getting on the air.
Former Mayor David Parrish has become somewhat of an institution to the people of Madisonville. David, after serving 28 years in public office, is still very active in the community. Let's listen now as he speaks of our former owner, the late Elmer Kelly.
Well, of course, it goes back a good many years. Back in the beginning, Elmer Kelly worked for me for some 2 or 3 years at the drugstore. And at the same time, he was writing sports down for the Messenger. And at night, while he was working, and he had a quiet moment while he was taking a couple of correspondence courses, and he had on his mind always talking about he's going to go into the broadcasting business, and which he eventually did, as we all know, and did for many years. Of course, like all people, when they try to get started, Elmer didn't have any money, and he came to me one day and said, asked me if I would go on his note for a certain amount of money to for his part of the radio station. And I told him no, that I wouldn't, that when I was a little younger myself, I went on a note for a fella and I had to pay it. And I swore then I'd never go on another note. And I haven't to this day. But I told Elmer, I said, now look, I got a little money laying over there, and if you promise me that you're going to really intend to stick with this thing and where you can pay this money back, I'll let you have it myself, and then we won't be bothered with any notes or what have you. Well, that was fine. So I let him have the money, and every Monday morning, Elmer would come in and make his payment, and we had a unique bookkeeping system, I might say. And the shelf is still in the back of the store, where every Monday morning when he came in to make his payment, he laid the money down, mark off, just make a mark on the end of this shelf, and he was off and gone. But that's the way we kept up with the thing.
That first day on the air was a very important one to Elmer Kelly and Hubert Wells. Mr. Wells now enlightens us.
It was a rather hectic day. We were all new at it. And I'll never forget a lot of the things that happened then. But the station was very successful its first year.
Would you tell the story that you told me a few moments ago about the first newscast on the station?
Well, this was something that Elmer and I frequently laughed about. Elmer was going to do the news that morning, a 15-minute news broadcast, just after sign-on at 8 o'clock, and I was on the board in the control room, and at the last minute he forgot something downstairs, and he ran down those three flights of stairs and came rushing back up the three flights of stairs and got into the studio just as I introduced him with the news. And he said, "Good morning, everyone," and read about one paragraph and literally collapsed. I mean, he was so out of breath, he dropped his copy and sank into a chair. And so I ran in and picked up the copy and came back to the control room and finished the newscast. So I guess that's why I turned out to be a newscaster for the next 21 years instead of Elmer.
He just didn't have what it takes to run up and down three flights of stairs.
Well, I'll tell you, the first 4 or 5 years, we had three flights of stairs to go up and down, and it was a job running up and down those stairs all the time.
Hubert, who were some of the first employees at WFMW-FM?
Well, our first announcer was Ernie Allen, who has been in and out of Madisonville a number of times in past years, and his then-wife, Mary. She was a receptionist, and Ernie was an announcer. And we had Richard Rembert from Cocoa Beach, Florida, as our engineer, and another gentleman whose first name was Roy, and I can't remember his last name. He was a retired Marine radio operator, and he was with us just a few months and then left. And then in August of 1949, we hired Chuck Lee.
Chuck Lee joined WFMW in August of 1949. Chuck, who is presently chief engineer, has served in every capacity from FM sign-on announcer to news director. Chuck, whose face is as familiar around Madisonville as your own brother, talks about the transitions and changes he has seen come to WFMW over the past 25 years.
Tom, there's been many changes in the past 25 years. Namely, in early 49, we started as an FM only above the what is now His Corners, and we had a FM only, I say, antenna atop the building there on top of a 50-foot tower and 1,000 watts FM. And later on in 50, I believe it was, we bought out WCIF and in turn changed the call letters to WFM, WAM and FM. And we moved from our studios from the atop His Corner building, which was on the third floor at the time. We moved over to the third floor of the Kentucky Bank building right across the street. And at that time, we moved our transmitter, our FM transmitter, out on the hill here where we're presently located. We had just a small room, about a 15-foot square room that we kept our transmitters in. We had a little console where we operated with some programs. And then at a later date, we increased our power on AM from 250 watts, which we originally had in 1950, to 500 watts, and that was a limit that we'll ever be able to go on this channel because of the fact that we get out pretty strong and we would interfere with someone else. In the meantime, we also, a little later on, we changed our FM from 1,000 watts to 2,800 watts, and at a later date, we also went from 2,800 to 28,000, which we presently are. And about 4 years ago, we went full stereo. Lots of changes that I've seen in the meantime. A lot of employees changed, worked with a lot of nice fellows. Some of them gone on to better things into the network. Jim Stewart, as a lot of our folks around here will remember, is doing a network's children's program from Chicago at the present time. Lots and lots of things have happened. I could go on and on, but I think I better not. Thank you, Tom.
Uncle Dick and his Calling All Kids program at one time had an enrollment of over 5,000. This program, which more of us remember than we like to admit, was one of the most popular ever to be aired over WFMW. Dick Harris now chats about radio as it was in 1949.
The first thing I want to say is that I'm not nearly as old as this is going to sound because I started at a very tender age.
Okay.
But before we get into the WFMW era, I have to go back and mention a couple of years before that when radio first came to Madisonville.
Uh-huh.
That was in 1947. And the old station was WCIF, which had the same frequency, 730.
Right.
In those days, when I went to work in the morning, I walked in, turned on the console. While it was warming up, I went down and fired the furnace. And then while I was playing the Star Spangled Banner, I swept the floor. And then if I got through sweeping in time, I'd run to the newsroom and get the news. And maybe I could get back before the Star Spangled Banner was over.
And probably felt you had it easy, too, didn't you?
Oh, it was a great life, I'll tell you. So there's been quite an evolution in radio in Madisonville since that time. But, remember the first day WFMW went on the air. Of course, it was strictly FM then.
Right. You were actually a member of the first staff of announcers at WFMW-FM, right, Dick?
Both of us.
Both of you.
Okay. No, there was a day man besides Mr. Kelly and Mr. Wells, and I was more or less the night man. I don't know how late we stayed on, maybe to the late hour of 9 or 10 o'clock at night. But as I recall, I came in about 5 or 6 in the evening and finished out the day because I was doing a little tour of duty in, Mr. Wells' downtown record shop during the day, and so I had a pretty full day altogether.
Right, right.
But it was a great time. Of course, radio's great and lots of excitement, and it's something different all the time. I particularly always liked the precision and the timing and this.
Uh-huh.
Of course, today I find a lot of records. I don't know whether you ever are able to time them or not. They never seem to quit. They just sort of trail off into the sunset. But the old 78 shellac records used to have the time right on them, and you could program down to the nth
degree.
You didn't
worry about it. Dick, when and how did the Calling All Kids program originate?
Well, I'll have to admit, Tom, that it wasn't absolutely original. It was sort of a steal. I'd heard the program on another station in Kentucky. No, it wasn't in Kentucky. It was in Indiana. Something similar. And to keep from copying it too much, of course, I made some changes, particularly the marching off to bed at the end of the program and the prayers that, believe it or not, a great many children learned to say back in those days. And this part of it, and, of course, the Calling All Kids rather than the name that I first heard the program by, essentially it was the same thing as far as using Little Orly and Sparky and the records that and the things like that. And, of course, as a matter of fact, I think I even stole the other fellow's theme song, Glowworm, to come on with because it was just so appropriate that I never found anything to beat it.
Right. Did you think up Uncle Dick, or was that given to you?
Well, I used that because, as I say, I was a very tender age myself then.
Yeah.
Even in 1949, that's when we started it in 49. And I felt like this giving advice to the kids and asking them to march off to bed and so forth, if they knew I was a teenager, they wouldn't have too much respect for me. So I put the uncle on there to make
it
sound a little more mature. And at the height of the program, and of course it was sort of a continuous thing, some kids would graduate, and when they got to be 13, we sort of kicked them out of the club. and then we'd pick them up when they were born. But generally, we kept an enrollment of about 5,000 kids.
It's a lot of listeners, isn't it?
And believe it or not, we sent birthday cards to every one of them. Now, this was through the courtesy of the sponsor. I have to tell you one thing about the sponsor. We had a password, which was the sponsor's telephone number. And there was one youngster here. His father is now a federal judge. But at the time, he was one of our Calling All Kids Club members. And one day, his mother had called a competitor to come pick up some dry cleaning at their house. And this youngster answered the door, and the man said, "I'm here to pick up the cleaning." And this youngster says, "What's the password?" Well, the man didn't know it. He says, "Go away. You can't have it." So he sent him away, and his mother had to call the password, which back in those days, there were only three digits and a telephone number. And when I say those days, that sounds like a long time ago, doesn't it? But really, it wasn't so long ago. But anyway, our sponsor got around to pick up the clothes.
He's standing up for what he believes in, I guess.
Baker and Hickman has been sponsoring the Noon News over WFMW ever since that historical first day. Madisonville businessman James Baker was kind enough to come to our studios with these words.
As Madisonville's oldest retail establishment, Baker and Hickman is pleased to salute WFMW as it celebrates an important milestone in its history of service to Madisonville and surrounding area. 25 years ago, WFMW first brought local radio to our area. And on that very first day on air, Baker and Hickman brought to you the Midday News. Now, a quarter of a century later, Baker and Hickman still sponsors that program, the oldest continuous radio program in Hopkins County. Such a record is positive testimony to Baker and Hickman's belief in the value and influence of WFMW over the years. We are proud to have been a partner with WFMW in a small segment of the service they have performed. An occasion such as the 25th anniversary causes one to stop and look back over the past. There comes a flood of memories of outstanding programs from WFMW. 20 years ago, we watched our young sons, as well as children all over the county, listening excitingly to Dick Harris's wholesome program, Uncle Dick. Today, many of these children are the young leaders of our community. And who in Madisonville will ever forget the colorful and dramatic sports reporting of the late Elmer Kelly? Who can ever forget his favorite expression, "Holy cow," that popped out at any amazing turn of events? Then there was Hubert Wells, with his clear and distinct voice, who became the news authority to the people of the area. In the balancing of programming, the daily devotions have always been a meaningful part of the schedule. To many shut-ins and others unable to attend church services, the Sunday broadcast from the local churches have brought inspiration and comfort. And equally appreciated by many has been the weekly Sunday school lessons taught first by the late Harper Gatton, then ably continued by Mr. C.I. Henry from the men's bracket class of the First Baptist Church. And one should not forget to gratefully acknowledge the public publicity and sports spot announces which WFMW have given to literally thousands of programs and activities of churches, civic clubs, and community organizations over the years, all in the effort to make this a better community for all. Yes, on this occasion, the WFMW's 25th anniversary, Baker and Hickman would like to say thank you. Thank you to the staff and management of WFMW, past and present, for your 25 years of service to this area. And we extend best wishes for the years ahead as you continue to serve a growing community.
For many, many years, the late Elmer Kelly was the total sports authority in Western Kentucky. Elmer, who was with WFMW from the beginning to his untimely death in 1973, was admired and respected for his uncanny ability to call a whale of a ball game. Listen now as Elmer describes the last 6 seconds of Erlington's 1967 state championship game.
It's 53-52. Time is going to be blown back in. Now let's see what the strategy is going to be. On the baseline goes Greg Martin. The clock will not start until the ball is inbound. It comes inside, flipped to Justin Sharp with 6 seconds. Sharp with a long shot. It's no good. Ball taken off. Hobson shoots. He got it! He got it! He got it! He got it! Erlington has won the ball game!
In 1962, Elmer and Hubert Wells bought out the stock owned by Messenger Broadcasting and changed the name to Sound Broadcasters Incorporated. In August of 1970, Elmer bought the stock owned by Mr. Wells and was the sole owner until his death, February 27, 1973. Gladys Kelly now tries to carry on as she felt he would have wanted her to.
Elmer's life was centered around this radio station. He loved everything about it. As you know, he loved sports and especially baseball. He studied it all the time and was so knowledgeable. I still have his sports library. I can remember the old Kitty League days when his summers were devoted to traveling with the team and broadcasting the baseball games. Frankly, I dreaded to see the season come because the children and I never saw him from April through September, but that was his great love. Also, he had such pride and love for his country. He served in the Air Force in World War II with the rank of major, and the editorials that he wrote in later years reflected the great patriotism that he felt. His greatest achievement, and the one he took the most pride in, was the winning of George Washington Honor Medal Award from Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, for a patriotic program he created. I remember he worked for a year on it, revising and editing, before he finally submitted it. There were just two radio stations in the United States that won that year, WFMW and a Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania station. As I look back, Tom, it seems the thing that I think about most is the long years of hard work that were devoted to making the station what it is. And again, I'm so thankful to you and all the wonderful people we have here to carry on what was started 25 years ago.
We would like to take this opportunity to make a verbal tribute to Elmer Kelly, a man who did more than his share to pave the way for broadcasters of the future. Bob Simmons is the present general manager of WFMW. Bob has been with the station since 1960 and started as a staff announcer. Bob says radio has come a long way in the past 25 years, and he would like to share just a few moments with you on the subject.
To say that a lot of water has passed under the bridge in the last 14 years certainly would be an understatement. Both Madisonville and WFMW have undergone some very dramatic changes in the years that I've been here. In the fall of 1960, when I first drove up the hill, the drive was still unpaved. I remember thinking, I'll bet that rascal is going to be tough to drive on in the winter mud. Well, I never got a chance to find out. I talked with Hugh Wells that day, played an audition tape for him, got the job, and when I came back 2 weeks later to start work, the drive going up the hill had been paved. That's just an example of how the station has constantly grown and improved. Some of the changes and improvements have taken longer, of course, but some have been just about that quick. There have been problem times during the years since 1960. Somewhere around, 61, 62, I don't recall just which, we had not only the primary, but also the backup crystal burn out in our FM transmitter. We were off the air for almost a month on FM. I never heard of it happening anyplace else before or since. I thought for a while I was going to be out of a job since I worked the late shift then. Ended up filing records until the new crystals could be grown and cut. One of the more humorous things that I recall in the first year or so I was here, in fact, I guess it was the first year, I'd been having breakfast about the time everyone else was having lunch since I was working the late shift down at what was then Howard's Restaurant. It ended up that quite often I sat at the counter and chatted with an older gentleman who happened to be in the same time. He, of course, was having lunch. I had no idea who he was. I guess some of our conversations got to be pretty spirited about state and world affairs. After all, an 18-year-old I was then had a pretty different view than that of the gentleman in his 70s. It wasn't until Christmas time that we got together for the station's Christmas party that I found out the elderly gentleman was Edgar Arnold Sr., the principal owner of the station at that time. Of course, not long after that, Hugh Wells and Elmer Kelly bought the other interests out and ended up in a 50-50 partnership. That worked out great. I really don't know why. They had such different personalities, almost like daylight and dark. But the fondest memories came in, 1962 and just a couple of years ago. The hundreds of basketball trips that Elmer and I shared, along with a list of, many of our finest friends, the greatest people you could ever hope to meet. You sports fans, I'm sure, will remember the Les LeGrands, the Ed Ramseys, Charlie Rao, Bernard Crowley, Bill Cox, Walter Harper, and dozens more. We always managed to have a good time, and over the years I learned a lot from the dean of Kentucky sports broadcasting, Elmer Kelly. Radio and sports were two things that he really loved most, and he managed to combine them right here. Elmer bought the station a couple of years before his death, and it was like a dream come true for him. I feel that we have a great radio station right now, but I'll never forget how it was then. Then I guess that's how it should be. The good times and the bad fade into just fond memories as the years go by.
We hope you have enjoyed this special 25th anniversary program. We want to thank those who participated and apologize to those we didn't have time to mention. In its 25 years of operation, WFMW Radio has touched the lives of many individuals, just too many to thank personally. That's why we would like to take this opportunity to say thank you. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you, our many, many sponsors, for without you, the service we give to our community just wouldn't be possible. Thank you, the many civic groups that have supported us so strongly. Thank you to our city and county officials, past and present, who have aided us in presenting a true look into the news and public affairs. But most of all, thank you, our many, many listeners. We hope that you benefit just a little bit every day from the programming we present to make your lives a little brighter. It's been 25 years now. For the staff and management of WFMW AM Country and FM Stereo, we hope to see you in 25 more.